A big thanks to the entire Lug Radio crew, all from season one to the current, and especially to Ack, who showed me the one true way to freedom. Pierce.
Thank you, mate. I appreciate that, Christian Holm, and I'm glad I could help.
Incidentally, I'd like you to point out, this is the guy who's been talking about Emacs for an entire email.
He's loving the freedom. He moved from Windows. The fact that he's not using the editor I use is a different thing. He's in the free world.
So it's good to know that, you know, G-Edit advocates and Emacs advocates can live in the same world.
Absolutely.
I feel really happy. All the soul that died 5 minutes ago has now been
reborn.
We're
all friends together.
Chris, do you fancy a hug?
Not from you.
Oh, don't, please. It'll be like a fucking helicopter accident.
Trying to be quick because a bathroom break is needed. Welcome to Lug Radio Season 5, Episode 15. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
I'm not doing that.
Because oh, come on!
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Okay, so on this show, we're going to be doing an interview with our pig-carrying friend, Dave Neary. And he's one of the organisers of the Linux Graphics Libra...
The Libra Graphics meeting.
Stop fidgeting your finger at me, sweet, like some kind of seller of watches under a jacket.
Dave Neary is going to be encouraging us to part with some of our hard-earned cash in the bid to create greater open graphics freedom.
Indeed.
Absolutely. A joke, very briefly, for the two or three people who are at Guadec and listen to the show in Spain... Which was, do you remember the seller of watches? You thought you were Alibaba.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
That's never going to be forgotten. That was glorious. Anyway,
Alibaba!
Honestly, the funniest thing in the entire world. It really was. Anyway,
thank you.
The egoless desktop. Is it a good idea? We're arguing about it. I think it is. Bacon thinks it isn't.
Actually, bacon's in the middle.
Bacon roll, never mind.
always in the middle.
For once, Act decides that... say it again.
Project methodologies.
So I got too many teeth to say that. Act decides that project methodologies aren't pointless after all and is going to tell us all about Scrum.
Yes.
And we're going to talk a little bit about Lug Radio Live in the US, which is this coming Saturday.
Are you excited, Chris?
I'm quite actually nervous now.
Are you excited, Adam?
I am just glad that the fucking constant siege of misery is over for organising it. It was hard work, but yes, I am.
Thank Are you excited, Ack?
I'm dead. It's still very busy.
We have felt doomed for a while, and we're now excited. So a fucking week before we do it.
We are excited. It's this Saturday.
Don't you
this
think
Saturday.
It all just seems to have come together right about now, and it's been fucking misery for a month or two.
It's been hard, bloody work. Please go along. Good grief.
Try not to sound quite as desperate, if you would.
No, seriously, we've worked our asses off.
Who are you, desperate-sounding guy?
My name is Desperate Bacon.
My name is Desperado Bacon.
Your name is...
Chris Proctor.
My name is Adam Sweet.
I'm Stuart Langridge. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
A couple of weeks ago, I started a new job, and there have been lots of interesting things about it, one of which was Django, which we talked about in the last show. But the other thing I wanted to talk about, because I'd never come across it before, is Scrum, which is the way we run projects. At this point, where I say, has anybody heard of Scrum? And you all say,
no.
Absolutely, which I hadn't either, to be quite
assuming
honest.
Assuming it's nothing to do with
I'd heard of Scrum.
Not the rugby one.
No, I'd heard of Scrum.
Oh, okay.
Didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
I'd heard broadly about it, but...
To be honest with you, when I first started talking to the people... where I work, they said, we're using Scrum. And I said, what's Scrum? And they said, it's a project methodology. And then I fell asleep. Right? Because my entire experience of project methodologies, ways of running a software project, is they're all incredibly, incredibly boring. And they involve loads and loads of bookkeeping and all that crap. And so I just dismissed them all. Things like Prince 2. They're all being used by, you know, huge, great big companies who are developing £10 million software projects for the government and all that kind of thing. And they're just totally, totally pointless.
Yes, yes.
The thing I thought was interesting when they started explaining this to me is Scrum's an extreme programming thing.
God.
I'm not going to extol hugely the virtues of extreme programming.
For our listeners who aren't aware of extreme programming, do you want to maybe first explain that?
Yeah, I was going to get into that.
You are our listener.
I just downloaded thousands of times.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. He wasn't even in most of the show. You can't beat him up for that.
So egotistical. I bet you have sex to it as well, don't you?
That's
funny if anyone was in the sound check.
Anyway, extreme programming. Right. A while back, a guy called Kent Beck wrote a book It was about
is he a journalist?
A methodology he called extreme programming. What?
Kent Beck sounds like a journalist.
Does this involve programming while stood on the top of mountains or something?
That's right, absolutely.
Is that like extreme ironing?
Yeah, it's like ironing. Yeah. Your laptop. Yeah.
You can only write code while you're parachuting. That's exactly how it is, you fucking idiot.
Of course it is.
No, that's not what it is.
That was a very succinct and and concise boot in the spuds to Mr. Pocteau.
So then, all the language.
Because he's a moron. Is it like extreme ironing and stuff on mountains? No, it isn't. The idea behind it was it's quite similar to the whole open source thing, in that there's a lot of ideas about releasing early and releasing often and getting stuff done very quickly. The word you hear used a lot is agile. It's an agile methodology.
Not agile.
Yeah, that's right. It's a geely. Right, that's two of you now banned from this conversation, so just me and Adam left.
I haven't actually spoken yet, apart from to take the piss, so you may as well just rule me out as
well. Yeah, because I've been full of inspiring commentary so far.
No, the point is, right, agile software methodologies, the idea behind them is that you work very quickly, you do work in short bursts. There's lots of...
Sounds like me, really.
Well, yeah, to some extent it is. At least to some extent, the way that the open source projects tend to work anyway. But it's a bit more formalised, I suppose. So there are kind of procedures you need to go
through. Hang on a second. Right. When you talk about agile programming, is that related to pair programming?
Pair programming is a technique recommended as part of an agile programming.
And that's the concept of someone standing next to you while someone else programs and then switching roles.
The idea behind pair programming is you have two people, a driver and a navigator. The driver is the person sitting at the keyboard, and then the navigator's watching what they're doing. So the idea is that the...
I can't think of anything worse than doing that.
You'd be surprised if you actually do it. You're not there. The person who's driving isn't just a robot typing in what the navigator says. The idea is the navigator's thinking two or three lines of code ahead or two or three functions ahead.
If I was the driver, I'd be thinking, just fuck off and let me get on with it. And if I was the navigator, I'd be impatient saying, get out the fucking way, you're doing it wrong. Maybe I'm a control freak or something.
It is difficult when you're pair programming. If you're the navigator, it is quite difficult to not just go, no, get out of the way. But the idea is that, in order to write code, those of you who aren't coders may not have come across this, but if you're writing code, you have to manage a lot of state in your head all at once.
Yeah.
And so you're quite often concentrating quite deeply on the thing that you're writing and not thinking big picture. Sometimes you take a step back and think, I wish I hadn't done it that way. I wish I'd done it this different way. Because then this whole lot would have been easier. And that's the kind of thing the navigators think about, thinking slightly bigger picture.
This is slightly different from agile programming, though. We've kind of wandered off.
Pair programming is a technique.
It was his fault. Jono's fault.
Yes, agile programming, as I understand it, is basically you set yourself a fairly short-term goal. And then you say, right, we will do this in 2 days or a week. Then you do that and then move on to the next.
Scrum, the thing I'm going to talk about, is, as I understand it, and I'm quite... this is all a bit new to me, this, right? But Scrum, as I understand it, is a method of doing agile. Agile, like you say, is a kind of a concept. You set short sprints to do coding in. Scrum explains how to set up those sprints and how to work out what goes into each one and so on. And I found it really liberating, I suppose you'd
call it. So give us a meaty example of how it works.
Right, okay. I can't talk too much about exactly what we're doing at work. But
well, let's imagine it's interesting.
To pick an example, the person who's the product owner, the person in the business who decides what actually needs doing.
Let's say that person's name is Jono.
Puts together a thing called the product backlog, which is basically a list of all the stuff they want. But these are done as, they're called user stories. So instead of a list of features, they're all a little description. So you'd say, as a user of the website, I want to be able to download songs. Imagine we're doing Recreant View, say, Jono's music site. Right. You'd say, as a user of the site, I want to be able to download songs. As a publisher to the site, I want to be able to easily publish a song.
Sounds very similar to use cases in traditional.
User stories are very much like use cases, but
it's just sounding a little bit more generic.
They're supposed to be phrased in that way. As a someone, I want to something so that I can.
So you're
something.
Identifying the role and the activity, essentially.
Yes, absolutely. Right, okay. So. What's called the product backlog is basically a huge, grubby list of these, all of them. And then you go through each one and then you size it. So you say, you pick a task and say, this one is of size one.
Right.
You pick a relatively small task and say, this task is of size one. And then for each task, you say, okay, it's twice as big as that. It's three times as big as that. It's four times as big as that. It's 10 times as big as that. So you don't actually care how long it's going to take in hours. You just pick an arbitrary task, which is kind of your base one.
Right,
and then you size everything else by comparison with it.
It's arbitrary units. Kind of.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of size it in arbitrary units.
Okay.
And then you can say, right, okay, I believe the units are called story points, I think. And here I'm getting a bit rusty on the theory. Because what we've got, and the way you're supposed to, you have a scrum master, who's the person who actually takes care of all the bookkeeping and makes sure you're doing the process.
Right? And fights crime.
Right. I got a question for you, right?
Yeah.
How does this compare in process and end product to, say, what you would normally do then?
Depends on what you mean by what I would normally do.
If you're you're at home and you decide you're going to write some code, I guess you've already explained the process. So you said that you found it Scrum liberating. How does the end product compare?
A bit of
a really oblique question.
Because I've only been there a few weeks.
Sounds like the end product will be the same. It's just the way you go about building.
Yeah, I mean,
it just sounds more strategic.
Yeah,
exactly. It's just basically one of the reasons I like it is that it's quite similar to the way I think anyway. There's just some formalism, some structure around it. And having the structure helps. Once you've done the sizing stuff, you then say, okay, one unit is called a story point. And again, this is where I'm starting to get a bit unclear on the exact details, but you say we can do this many story points in a sprint, right? And then a sprint is, say, 2 weeks long or a week or something. Then you put together that sprint. Okay, you say, so we can do, as a team, we can do this many story points in a sprint.
So a sprint isn't doing sort of one thing?
No, exactly.
This is what I was thinking it was.
No.
But
no, I mean, so it's
you
a bit,
bundle them together and do...
It's a bit confusing because in the open source world generally, if people talk about a sprint, it's quite often either to do one thing or it's this random collection of stuff. So it's just sprint after sprint after sprint after sprint. So it makes it sound like you're in crunch mode all the time, and you're not. It's just a word for a block of time. But the idea is they're supposed to be quite short. So at the beginning of the sprint, you say we're going to do these tasks in this sprint from the product backlog, and then everyone goes away and does them. And then at the end of the sprint, you have a sprint retrospective where you say, did it work? What worked? What didn't? The idea of making them very short, sort of 1 week, 2 week blocks of time, is that then you can say, okay, we overcommitted or we undercommitted, or we would like to change the process around. We'd like to do it a bit differently. We'd like to size in a different way.
I guess you get to go back and sort of rethink your, after only making a 1 week mistake, as opposed
exactly.
to kind of
that,
6 months.
That's the point. With traditional software development, if people thought, well, we've got a problem here because of this, the next time you bring it up might be 3 months down the line, then you've wasted 3 months worth of work. So that's the kind of agile thing. Scrum is a method of doing agile, as I understand it.
It sounds like with these methodologies, they're all basically a very, very similar structured way of working with different descriptions. So, for example, I'd say most people, when they work in an organized way, I'm not talking about essentially hacking. The part of the joy of being a hacker is that you can approach it in whatever way you want to, essentially. Mm. But if you approach reasonably structured software development, you need a roadmap, you need milestones, you need regular assessment of your progress, you need a strategic plan. You need high-level goals, you need specific goals and actions. You need all of these bits and pieces, right? You need periods of time in which you get your team is together working. That's what sprints are. It sounds like all of these different methodologies are broadly, essentially, a very similar way of working, but with just different descriptions. The thing I fail to understand, and admittedly, I've never exercised any one of these before. I've heard of them. I've never actually executed one. But is... whether there's actually any real benefit to these different things.
I think...
Well, that's what I was getting at, really. Yeah, I mean, you say you found it liberating. How did it make you feel liberated?
There's a curious freedom in having the structure to rely on, in that you can... You know what there is... The problem I find with open source stuff is that quite often it's difficult to think... I say open source and that's not fair because some open source projects are more structured than others. But not knowing what to work on next, thinking, oh, I'll do a bit of this and I'll do a bit of that, and never getting to grips with anything. Hmm. Doing it this way... I mean, this is a thing for a team. You wouldn't do Scrum by yourself.
But you can achieve that without Scrum, though, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, We're talking about the difference between using some kind of methodology and not using one. Yeah. Using some kind of
it
structure
just sounds
or
like
not.
Using it as some kind of organisation.
I think really, basically, I think what you're saying is that you found it liberating in a sense because you didn't have to organise the project in your own brain because the methodology, you applied the project to the methodology to the project or the project to the methodology and it made sense of it for you.
Yeah. So essentially what you're saying is that
that's a good way of putting it.
You see, I assume that these things were essentially more efficient ways of working. Whereas it seems what you're basically saying is that this Scrum thing is basically a way of, is kind of like a, essentially it's like a pre-built template for how to organize a project.
How to sort break down your project into steps.
Because I was assuming that most software projects are actually reasonably well organized. And this thing is particularly efficient.
No. The idea of it, that's a very good way of putting it. I hadn't really thought of it that way. The idea behind it is not necessarily to say, if you do it with Scrum, you will end up being... you'll end up delivering faster or better products. I mean, ideally you will do, but maybe not. The point is really that when you say, yeah, you need to think of actions and milestones and stuff, this says, okay, this is how to think about milestones. This is how to identify them. This is the way you should write them down. This is the way you should work out how long it's going to take to get to the first milestone, the second milestone, the third milestone. Right. So you can predict ahead of time how long it's going to take. It's so that you don't suddenly think, oh God, we ought to write down some milestones 4 months into the project. It kind of specifies all the bookkeeping that you need to do. So you don't have to think about which bookkeeping to do, you just have to do it.
So essentially, it's a cookie cutter
method
for an organised project.
Yes, right, basically.
Okay. And I think one of the reasons why you were saying, Jono, it sounded like all these methodologies sound the same, is I think really they are basically the same thing.
Ingredients.
It's just different labels for the processes.
That's what it seems to me.
Probably breaking it down in slightly different
ways. I mean, the details probably
well.
Slightly different.
Just as an example, how we make Ubuntu and how we work in Canonical as well as in the community has all of the same ingredients to what you're talking about. We don't, from what I'm aware of, there's no formal, you know, Scrum technique used. But it sounds all broadly very similar, but it seems like Scrum is just a different way of describing it.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think someone went, I am going to build a project methodology and I'm going to call it Scrum. Some people sat down and went, okay, we need to work out how to do projects, and they worked out a way that worked well for them, and then they thought, this could be useful to other people.
What does Scrum mean?
I don't know, I think it's just a name.
It's got to be an acronym.
I don't think it stands for
I think it's actually something to do with rugby scrums.
I think that's the idea. You know, everyone together as a team.
I know. Around project. What you do is you link arms and kick each other in the shins. That's a good idea.
Works for quite a few open source projects, that particular technique, I think.
You say it doesn't scale down to one developer. Is there anything that kind of an individual developer could take from it, or is it just pointless? What's the minimum number of people you think you need?
My experience, a single developer, if you do some planning rather than no planning, you will be fine. I mean, when I sit down to write code, I always have to sit there and think, if I'm trying to write something semi-real rather than just a knock-off a shell script, I have to force myself not to jump to the keyboard and start writing code. I have to think about stuff that I need to do, you know, write down. Some kind of a plan. Do some designs on paper first. If you're doing that at all as a solo developer, then you'll probably be fine. You don't need
the whole sort of Scrum thing and all those agile methodologies are basically ways of taking that and scaling it up to having multiple people
To be honest with you, as you say, project methodologies are all about specifying how you do the bookkeeping so you don't have to think about it. You don't have to think, how should we write down milestones? How do we define what a milestone is? How do we define how long this is going to take?
It's a way of forcing everybody to use the same sort of milestones as well.
The big question is, bringing it towards our audience of open source people, is that one thing that people talk about, you know, as a major benefit of open source and free software is the fact that people can get involved in hacking. It's fairly unstructured, it's fairly anarchic, and you can just get involved, you can just write code. And particularly with the emergence of things like distributed revision control, like Bazaar as an example, you can just make a branch and hack away and then merge your branch sort of thing. Do you think that this undermines hacking as a concept? Do you think this undermines our... because our hacking model clearly works to a degree. I mean, it's not quite as anarchic as people make out, because actually most large open source projects are pretty organized.
I've got some structure.
But how do you feel like it compares to the traditional viewpoint of hacking?
I the point about it, from my experience of it, and again, if there are going to be everyone in the world who's touched Scrum is more experienced with it than I am. But as far as I can tell, it's semi-heavily oriented around saying, okay, we're going to get this much work out of a bunch of developers in the next... we're going to get this many hours out of a bunch of developers in the next sprint. Which doesn't really work with open source stuff.
Do you think the inspiration behind this is about essentially...
You know, I mean, you,
determining capacity.
You can realistically say we will get 5 hours per day from every developer. We've got 10 developers. Therefore, in a day, we will get 50 hours of work. Therefore, in a week, we will get 250 hours of work. So what will we do?
Right.
How will we chop up work to fit into that 250 hours? That doesn't work for open source stuff because 1 week you might get 200 hours of work out of people, and the next week you might get 20 hours of work, and you don't know. Mm. I mean, if you're prepared to organise your open source project to the point where you can say, okay, now people are going to commit to working this much on it, but that's not how it works.
No, I
don't think. It's about... the point of methodology, as I understand it, is to say, we've got this much time, what's the best way to use it?
Interesting.
Open source hacking doesn't work that way. Yeah. That's more about we've got this much stuff to do.
So it seems,
when it's done, it's done.
So it seems like the what we're learning here is that essentially Scrum is a good thing to try, but it might not necessarily be right for your project or your organization. It's not necessarily there to replace other things. It's there to augment it.
Yeah. If you've got a relatively tight-knit team, I mean, you know, you don't have to say we've got 250 hours worth of work a week out, but you might get 20 hours worth of work a week, but it gives you a way of thinking about how to prioritize what's going on, about making sure that stuff doesn't fall through the cracks.
And where can people find out more about it?
I bought a book, and I can't remember what it was called.
But Amazon.
Scrum for Dummies?
But I suspect if you search for Scrum Agile on Google, you'll find
out. There's a Wikipedia article on it.
Scrum VM?
They'll not Scrum VM, idiot.
Scrum brackets development on Wikipedia.
Yeah, they'll be there's
maximizing potential with Scrum.
There's plenty on the web about it.
Okay, on the show right now we've got a friend of the show, I think, is the best way of describing
it. Absolutely.
Yeah, Mr. Dave Neary, who's an Irishman living in France. How are you doing, Dave?
Doing good, doing good.
Excellent, excellent. So, you're involved in the Libre Graphics meeting, right?
Again, yeah.
And, yeah, you've been doing this for a while. So, tell us about the event and tell us why we should give a shit.
Okay, so the Libre Graphics meeting was essentially founded to be a place where free software developers working on graphics applications got together. Now, graphics applications, they're a strange bunch. You've got the GIMP and Inkscape are kind of GNOME applications, but they don't really consider themselves GNOME applications. And on the KDE side, you got Scribus, which is, you know, not really a KDE application, but it uses Qt. And then Blender is, you know, a breed apart. But yet we share so much. And if you look at the surveys that come out every now and again, the big applications that people are missing on Linux are the graphics applications. They're looking for Photoshop and Illustrator you know, the graphics applications.
And would you consider video editing part of that remit, or is that not so much?
Well, it was certainly part of the Libre Graphics meeting. Actually came out of the Create project some sense.
Okay.
So I don't know if you've heard of that. The Create project is essentially a mailing list, a wiki, and a place where collaboration happens outside of the conference. So the conference is just the meeting place. And then out of the meeting place you get plans for specs and for shared resources and for things that we can do together between the projects, and all of that happens at the Create place.
Oh, I see.
On the Create list, and the Create list was actually, you know, we've had people from Creative Commons on there. We've had people including involved in music applications on there. Uh-huh. So yeah, video editing would definitely fit in terms of the kinds of things that would go on there, yeah.
Cool.
Excellent.
Cool. I mean, you said that you've got, you know, all these projects. You've got Blender and Krita or Krita, or however you pronounce it, and the GIMP and whatnot. You've got so much in common, but what kind of things really get discussed there? I mean, I'm just trying to work out what Inkscape and Blender would actually have in common to discuss, apart from saying, isn't it great doing a graphics application on Linux? I mean, what what detailed things do you do?
Okay, so the easiest way to get into this is probably kind of concrete results that have come out of the project and out of the conference and out of the Create project in the past. So one of the things, for example, is that you can drag and drop from pretty much any graphics application to any other graphics application, and things just work. You drag and drop a selection from the GIMP into Inkscape, and it becomes a bitmap in your vector drawing. Right. You drag and drop a curve from Inkscape into the GIMP, and it becomes a curve in the GIMP.
Right.
We've got a bunch of shared resource specs, so you can share things like palettes, gradients, and other data like that, brushes, among the various applications. That's all stuff that you don't need to, you know, it doesn't need to be application specific. So since it doesn't need to be application specific, you know, there's no good reason why you shouldn't get all of the applications together and make sure they're using the same format so that you can share that stuff around.
So it's very much about integration.
Another big success to come out of the Libre Graphics meeting in the past has been color management. Now, I don't know if you guys remember 3 years ago, there was essentially no color management in any of the graphics applications. And we got a guy from Little CMS, a guy called Marty Maria. Great guy, works for HP.
Right.
And he's the author of Little CMS in his free time, which is a free software color management system. And he came along and gave a presentation at LGM, and pretty much everybody wanted to get to talk to him. And within 6 months, you had color management in the GIMP, you had color management in Krita, you had color management in pretty much all of the graphics applications out there.
So just to clarify, just for our listeners, color management is important if you want to print stuff, right? Predominantly.
I'll give you the 2 second overview of color management.
Okay.
When you've got two printers, is a good thing. Any input or output devices, in fact. So any two printers, if you show the same image on the two printers, you print it to the two printers, it's not going to be exactly the same. The colors are not going to match exactly. Same thing, if you show the same image on two monitors, you're not going to get exactly the same image. If you take two different cameras and you put them at the same place and you take the same picture and you put them on the same computer, they're not exactly the same.
Yeah, right.
And that's because each device has its own characteristics, its own specificities. And so you've got a thing called a color profile, which defines that in terms of standard color spaces. And you can use those color profiles and combine them to make sure that you get exactly the same result when you're printing to two different printers, having taken pictures with two different digital cameras.
Right, gotcha. So just moving on slightly, I mean, it sounds like this, I've heard of the event. I was going to go to the first one, I think, but then I couldn't make it, because it sounds like quite an interesting event. It sounds like it's very much about integration between all these different applications. But something you've been making a fair amount of noise about in the last few days is donations. It seems like you guys are looking for some money to make this happen. So fill us in on why. What, have you robbed a bank? What's going on?
Well, we keep things cheap. You know, we don't spend much on, we're like you guys, we don't spend much on infrastructure.
Yeah.
And the main reason why we do that is because when we're hosting an event in some place like Montreal last year or Lyon the year before, this year it's in Wrocław in Poland, our major cost center is always going to be travel costs. And that is because the value of an event like this is the people who are at it. If you don't get if you don't get Carol Worth to an event to talk about Cairo or Bedad Esfabat, then you know, nothing to do with Cairo is going to happen. You know, Cairo is not going to get any benefit from the conference, and nobody's going to get a benefit from knowing what's going on in Cairo and integrating better with it, for example. So it's all about the people that you get at the conference.
Yeah.
And so we want to have as much of a budget as possible to make sure that the key people from all of the projects represented are at the conference. And pretty much 90% of the people working on graphics applications, unlike some other free software applications, pretty much 90% of the people are volunteers. They're doing this in their spare time, in their bedrooms, they're taking time off work, they're taking holidays to come to the conference, and they're paying their flights and accommodation out of their own bank account.
So in other words, they can't get an employer
to do it.
In other words, they can't get an employer to send them.
Absolutely.
Right, okay.
So unfortunately, this year we've had a major sponsor pull out. HP have sponsored us the first 2 years, and they didn't get our man in HP didn't get approval for his budget this year, which is unfortunate, but it's left us with something of a hole in our budget.
Right.
We haven't gotten any new sponsors on board. I think the economic downturn is probably in there for something. So we've got to. We've done this in the past with a GIMP conference that I organised 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. We made a call for donations from the public because we weren't doing very well. It's a hard case to make. You know, you're getting 20 GIMP developers together. It's a hard sell for a company to foot a $10,000 bill or whatever.
Right. And what about places like the? You know, it sounds like you're talking about Cairo. You're talking about Inkscape, things like that. I mean, surely the GNOME Foundation can help with this. I mean, aren't you on the foundation? Aren't you in the foundation? Can't you?
I'm a member of the foundation.
Can't you kind of wander in there and? Can't you wander in there with some big pockets?
Their own event and, huh?
Can't you wander in there with, you know, a big Mac on, some pockets, and kind of stuff some notes in your pocket or something?
Those days are gone, my friend.
Dave Neary openly admits to robbing from the GNOME Foundation, exclusive on Look Radio.
No. Well, you know, the GNOME Foundation just published a budget recently, so they've got their own budget plans laid out.
Right.
And this year they're planning to run at a $10,000 to $20,000 deficit. That is, they've made plans to spend more money than they're bringing in this year. So they're already hosting the fundraising that we're doing now is going through the GNOME Foundation. So they're already providing us with facilities,
right? Yeah.
And assistance in getting these funds there. It also means that funds that people who donate in the US are their donations are tax deductible, which is great. It's particularly important, I guess, for big sponsors, and we're hoping to get a few of those.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Okay. I mean, that makes I do find it to be a strange coincidence that this year the GNOME Foundation are going to end up $20,000 under, and amazingly enough, you need $20,000. Leaving that aside for a moment, a slightly different question. I mean, I'd like you at the end to explain to people where they can do a donation. But before we get on to that, you're the Libra Graphics meeting, yes? So it's about free software, graphics software.
That's right.
So, I mean, you said at the beginning one of the big things that people are missing on Linux is graphic applications like Photoshop and Illustrator and so on. So the goal here is not to try and get Photoshop or Illustrator onto Linux, it's to get the GIMP and Inkscape to be as good as those projects.
That's right too, yeah. So if you look at the same survey that says that, you know, that people are asked what applications are you missing on Windows, and all of the top applications were graphics applications. There was AutoCAD in there, and there was Microsoft Visio was in there as well. Those were the top five applications. Along with Photoshop, Dreamweaver, and Illustrator.
Yeah.
So, but then when you asked in another question, people were asked, you know, what are your plans for deploying on Linux? And their number one plan was use Linux equivalents of our Windows applications. So they're not looking to get their Windows applications running on Linux. They're looking for well integrated Linux applications that do what they expect of their Windows applications.
Okay, quick question. You say this is about getting the top developers from GIMP and stuff on board. Can anyone turn up?
Sure.
Or is this just for developers?
Sure, this is free software, dude. You know, we're all inclusive.
So it's not by invitation or anything. It's just a case of, you know, turn up and listen to some talks.
No, but the main target is to get artists there, get people who are using free software graphics applications in the same place as the developers so that they can see you know, how people are using the applications and what kind of features are missing see the cool things that people are doing with our software, because sometimes we forget that, you know, artists are, you know, they're a cool bunch of people and they're doing some really extraordinary stuff with our software. When you got your shoulder to the grindstone, it's easy to forget that. So that's the two types of people we're looking to get in particular, artists and developers of free software applications.
On a related note, when we run the Ubuntu Developer Summit, and it's got the same word, summit, in it, we make very, very clear that this is not a conference. It's very much a summit to get people together to work together on specifications and functionality. So we don't have, essentially, we don't have presentations there. Is it the same there? Is it very much a technical hacking thing? Or are there going to be talks about, you know, the latest exciting, I don't know, graphics algorithm?
So we don't use the word summit, we use the word meeting.
Ah!
Which is a slightly different thing.
That'll be why then.
Yes, it is. It is all about meeting. It is all about getting people in the same place and letting cool stuff happen. So there are some conferences, some presentations lined up, but they're essentially by developers for developers. And there are the best thing that's happened in the in previous years has been the Lightning Talk sessions, which have been really, really interesting. So we're planning on having a couple of those again this year.
Right, okay.
It's essentially the hallway track and the BAFs and the Hack Fest that are going to be of the most interest for a lot of our attendees.
Right, okay. I mean, I know since I'm, you know, half involved in the whole web development world, I know a fair few designers, and most of them are Photoshop people. And when I said, hey, try using the GIMP, you know, I think you'd like it, I think it's as good as Photoshop, an awful lot of them come back and say it's just not as good. Do you think that's actually the case? And if you do think it's the case, you know, very briefly, are we going to catch up? Are we already ahead and they just haven't got to grips with it? What should I do to convince people currently using the Mac and Photoshop they should be using Linux and the GIMP?
Okay, well, for some subset of Photoshop users, that's probably true. There are probably features missing in the GIMP now, which are essential to a small subset of Photoshop users. Things like managing images in CMYK and saving them to CMYK so that you can send them to a printer, having spot colors, things like that. Those are all essentially printer-specific features. So if you're not working with a printer, or if you're working with a printer and you really, you know, you're just sending your photos, I would say that for 95 to 97%, that's a rough guess, right?
But
to 95 to 97% of the uses that people could have for image manipulation software, the GIMP is just as good as Photoshop. It has the vast majority of the features that Photoshop has. It's missing that little bit extra, the deep color. It's missing the that's a pretty big one that people notice now, is that when you've got cameras that take photos in 12 bits and 16 bits per pixel, and your software can only manage 8 bits per pixel per channel, that's a problem.
That's cool. So, that being the case then, LGM, tell us where it is, tell us where people should go to donate.
Okay, so LGM is in Wroclaw. It's the start of May. It's from the 8th to the 11th of May. Right. So the website is www.libragraphicsmeeting.org, which has links to the place where you can donate as well. The donations are being hosted at Pledgy, which is a site I discovered recently. That's not why we chose it. I discovered it because somebody else recommended it. So the actual website for the donation, and you can get badges and things like that that you can put on web pages, is http pledgie.com/campaigns/613.
Perfect.
Okay. Excellent.
That's our campaign. That's linked to from the Libra Graphics meeting webpage, so that's probably the easiest way to get there.
Fantastic. Wicked.
So you're looking for $20,000?
Yeah, we've set a target at $20,000 in just over 2 weeks. And I checked up where we were at just before I left home earlier. And after the first day, the campaign launched today. And after the first day, we're already over $750. So that's
okay.
A pretty good start.
So, Lug Radio people, remember where you heard it first, go and donate. Dave has obviously rented out his pig 750 times already, so you have to applaud him for that.
Pig jokes, Joe.
But yes, thank you for talking to us, Dave. We hope you hit the target, and we hope LGM goes really well.
Thank you very much, guys.
Brilliant.
No,
thanks,
no problem,
Dave.
Man.
The GNOME Human Interface Guidelines give guidance on how you should name your project when it appears in menus on the screen and
yes.
So on. And one of the interesting things that I noticed about it a little while ago, and it occurred to me, things like gedit, for example, gedit isn't called gedit, it's just called text editor.
Yeah.
And part of the reason for this, I think, is that we're not in the business of pimping a particular product, because you don't make revenue from a project getting it onto people's Linux desktops. There's no necessary need that everyone absolutely has to. Well, you know, okay. But the point is that you can just call your graphics editor graphics editor if you want to. You don't have to put the name in front of people. But if you're making a product for Windows, say on the Windows Start menu, quite often stuff will appear as the name of the company who makes it, and then the name of the product. And it's really vitally important that you teach people the name of your product, so when they come to buy a new one, they'll buy yours and not someone else's.
Yes.
But because we're not desperate to drive revenue by selling software, you can get away from that. So there's much less ego in the desktop. You don't have to make sure that everyone desperately knows the name of your product and the name of the company that makes it. It's not there. And it struck me that it might be a bit of an advantage for us, because it's generally going to be clearer if something's called text editor rather than being called Notepad or Crimson Editor.
I'd say ego is probably the one wrong way of describing it. I mean, I know it's known as the egoless desktop, but it's not really ego. I mean, it's brand.
Yeah, okay.
There's a usability or interaction design benefit to saying this is a text editor and this is a calculator, as opposed to saying this is UltraCalc 5000 and this is Notepad.
Is there not a problem with that in that if you call it text editor, then everybody has to use Gedit? Because if my desktop is set up to say text edit,
you can't install it goes to Vim,
and yours goes to Gedit, and the same person clicks on either one, they're horribly confused when they.
Following on from Chris's point, I think this is crap for two reasons. First of all, I would like to see the name of the editor following on from the example we're using. The editor, the name of the editor in the menu, so I know what to expect when I open it when I click it. Because I don't want to click on text editor and get friggin' Kate or Kwrite or fucking XVim or something like that.
Right.
It's expecting a certain set of functionality, and to me, that's the name of the editor I'm going to use tells me what I'm going to be getting.
Now, this leads to an interesting issue here, because a lot of distros, obviously I know about Ubuntu Best, but we ship one of each thing generally, you know, so we'll have one text editor instead of in the old days when SUSE shipped like six or seven.
Well, it depends on the definition of the word ship. As if you just do the base installation, you only
I'm
get
talking
one.
About the base
installation. All the others are packaged and you can install them.
Yes, but I'm talking about shipping. Yeah. We don't ship stuff you can install afterwards, right? So we'll ship Gedit as an example as the text editor. Now, that's all right calling it text editor, theoretically, so long as we never change our minds on what we're shipping. So it's all right now so music player is Rhythmbox, right? But if we decide to ship Banshee at some point in the future, which is a pretty compelling consideration with all the work that's going into Banshee, you know, with Gongathong extraordinaire Aaron Bockover's work.
Absolutely.
Yes. Then that is going to sod people up a little bit, because it's going to change when they do an upgrade. So I think that's an interesting point that you raise, Adam. But I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence in this, in the fact that I can see...
I see the value.
There's a real benefit to describing what the thing is, but also the one thing I've discovered about open source, having worked for an open source company, is that the one thing you really do have when, you know, as a company, you know, it's difficult to make money, essentially, from open source software. All open source companies will say that. But the one thing you do have is you do have your brand and you do have your trademark. And that's even the case for open source projects. You know, like, I think if I was, you know, and then there's the issue as to whether it's the upstream or whether it's the distro. So as an example, I think if I was an upstream, some people might be pretty hacked off if they spend loads and loads of time working on, you know, Inkscape. And then it's just renamed Vector Graphics Editor. Mm-hmm.
You see,
but then again, it's not renamed in the application itself. You know, it's called Inkscape.
No, yeah, when you start it up, it will say Inkscape. It's
but the ego listing's inconsistent as well.
The thing I find interesting about it is that, take the Rhythmbox to Banshee example. Imagine you decided to do that. You're not going to decide to ship Banshee instead of Rhythmbox when Banshee is worse, right? Mm. It's going to be better. Therefore, why would anyone mind if they were upgraded to a better version of something?
I'm thinking in terms of documentation, in terms of training, in terms of, you know, people are going to click on music editor who've used Ubuntu a few releases back and expect to see broadly the same thing with a few extra buttons.
But the idea, at least behind, you know, GNOME KDE applications, is that they're supposed to be usable.
Of course.
You know, so if you're shipping something which people don't understand how to use, then that's a regression.
No. It's not a point of it not being usable. It's the point of it's different. It's a different interface. Yeah, but if you could have a very, very usable Rhythmbox, a very, very usable Banshee, and they both are very usable, but they're different. Their application design is
different. Rhythmbox people might decide to change the way Rhythmbox works for the next version.
The thing is, it's not
you
just...
You know, and then you wouldn't go, no, we're not going to ship it anymore. No, but it's changed a lot. There's no real difference between... If you go from what version is Rhythmbox at the moment? It tracks GNOME versions. Okay. I think. But yeah, if Rhythmbox decide to change their user interface for the next version, then that would be a change. But you're not going to go, we're going to stop shipping Rhythmbox when
that
happens.
No, but the point, the point is that one of the core aspects in usability is that if you have a label, if you have something, a description, it should always remain consistent, right?
Yes.
And essentially, if you have the term music player in Ubuntu or Fedora or whatever, and then the whole interface changes, it's different.
How different are Banshee and Rhythmbox? Not
very
much. No, they're just not.
They are. Well, they're different. The point is that they are different.
The thing is, to me, right, you have... I mean, first of all, it's not just a question of people are always going to package the better application, because better is subjective, and, I don't know, say fucking Linux Mint decide they want to ship Banshee instead of Rhythmbox. User expectation is going to be different. And back to the text editor, when I click something that says text editor, I'm normally going to want gedit, and I'm going to be pretty either disappointed or my set of expectations are going to have to shift suddenly if I suddenly get Kate, or, as I said, Xvim or Xemax or something like that.
It's one thing getting an incremental upgrade, but another thing getting a completely different application.
Yeah, and that to me is a usability failure, because you're clicking something with a certain set of expectations.
It's a usability failure from your point of view, because you know what to expect, whereas if I gave Linux Mint to my mum and said, just open this file in a text editor, I don't want to have to hurt
the thing
her.
Is,
what's
you,
a text editor? What is this gedit thing? What's this code thing?
Honestly, well, I mean, I think if you gave my dad gedit, right, and then the next day you switched that shortcut so it started up Kate instead, I don't think he'd even notice.
Can't you have
both? Why can't you
say gedit text editor? Why can't you say Kate?
You could
why should people have
to care? I mean, imagine you gave that to my dad. He said, I want to edit some text. Oh, I've got gedit text editor and Kate text editor. Why do I have to?
But that's
care
the point. You
this.
Only get one.
You should really only have one, shouldn't you?
But if you've only got one, then why put the name in it?
Sorry to interrupt. Right, imagine, right. Your dad uses a Linux PC three times. Twice, it's the one at your house, and another time, it's one somewhere else. He knows it's Linux, perhaps, but he doesn't really know any more than that. And he clicks edit text editor each time. Twice, he gets gedit, and the other time, he gets Kate. K-Write or something, and all of a sudden he expects the same thing, and all of a sudden the buttons look different, the menus are laid out differently, and say he got Xvim, which is like bizarre world, but all of a sudden he's in a modal editor, and it makes no sense to the way his brain's expecting.
Imagine it was word processor, and it went from being Microsoft Office Word to Open Office Writer. That's a hell of a different application. Yet, like Adam says, this person might be expecting the same sort of thing. That's the reason why the Eagleless desktop is a nice idea in theory, but it's got some flaws. Also, the branded desktop is a nice idea in theory, but it's also got some flaws.
I love the idea of a branded desktop, because I think we should be pimping our projects. Sorry to cut across you, Chris. I know you want to speak, but I really wish I'd done this myself, right? I was just browsing the web looking for some piece of information one day, and this guy's at the top of his website. He's got a GNU Cache banner because he wants to support, he says in his blog somewhere, I decided to support the projects that I care about, that I use daily, and give them some exposure. So here's a banner for GNU Cache. And I thought that's really cool. I don't use GNU Cache. In fact, it makes no sense to me whatsoever every time I've looked at it, but that's a really cool thing to do, and I'd love to be able to do that. And I think we should be doing that in our desktop. We should be exposing the names of our applications, but I do see a midway point where we could be saying gedit text editor.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, Chris, you may speak.
I'm just thinking that this, from the other point of view, if you use your application a lot, then knowing that it's called gedit is quite an important thing to do, and knowing the differences between gedit and Kate is probably quite important, certainly the differences between gedit and Vim. But like, I don't know the difference between Banshee and Rhythmbox. I just want to play some music. I mean, I'm trying to experience Linux user, but I really don't give a damn what the difference is.
The point is, download
the latest version of episode of Lug Radio and play it.
Yeah, but the point there is that...
Assuming that I know the Banshee and Rhythmbox play...
It's a specific specific case, but I mean, in Rhythmbox and Banshee, they've both got separate media libraries.
Chris, it shouldn't matter. Whether we're talking about text editors or we're talking about media players. It should be just anything to do with applications.
I know text editors because I do a lot of editing of text.
I know.
Media players because I don't play media.
I know, but that's other people. But that's like the other way around. Someone saying, "Well, I don't do a lot of text editing. I use media
players."
Other
people be the other way around.
My point here is that essentially going from what people get to know, people. Any software user, whether it's a Windows user or a Ubuntu user or a Fedora user or Mac user or whatever, will get to know certain software. And, you know, whether they know it as the text editor or whether they know it as G-Edit is neither here nor there.
The
benefit of knowing the brand is that if they then have it switched out from underneath them and they recognise the brand as different, they know the change has occurred.
Yeah, but that's for things that they know and they use, such as me with Vim. You know,
right.
Like kind of, but the stuff you don't know, you don't use very often. Like I don't use a media player more than once every kind of, you know,
2 weeks.
And this is not that
often.
We shouldn't muddy the waters of sensible default applications, right? So if you don't use a media player very often, then you rely on your distributor providing you with a media player that's going to work well for you that you don't need to have a lot of experience
with. How do you find that media player?
Yeah,
though?
This is the point, part
of the thing, this discussion came out recently on the GNOME usability list, which is what triggered the thoughts about it in my head. One of the things that people complained about, or didn't complain about, but brought up, was things like translation. I mean, take Banshee doesn't mean anything. It's got nothing to do with music. It's just a word.
Yeah.
Right? Rhythmbox, for example, if you knew nothing about media players and you thought, I want something to play some music, Rhythmbox, the name, might give you an indication that that's it. But do you translate that name for a Spanish desktop? Do you translate Rhythmbox into Boxo de Rhythmo or whatever?
No, I mean,
or do you just call it Rhythmbox, at which point the name is totally meaningless?
I don't see what the problem is in having brand and then description. Rhythmbox media player.
That makes sense to me.
Why decide between the two when you can just have a menu that's ever so slightly longer? You don't provide any translation of the brand, but you do provide a translation of the description.
At that point, you're confusing people by saying you've got several different media players.
But you don't.
Rhythmbox and Banshee.
You don't. This is the point, is that if you're the kind of people you're talking about will never install more media players. They'll look in sound and video and they'll click on whatever, insert word here, media player. The point is that if they know to install all of these different media players, then...
So what happens if you guys do decide to shift from Rhythmbox to Banshee? They then learn the word Rhythmbox media player. They then go start sound and video, and Rhythmbox isn't there.
No, but the word media player is still there.
So they then got to go search through the menu and go, oh, what the hell, what's this? No, oh, so Banshee media player. Is that the same thing?
You're relying on, understanding the Rhythmbox media player is the same as Banshee media player.
But they both do the same thing. I think most people would broadly, I think we need to credit our users with some intelligence that they will broadly assume that the words media player in one context and the words media player are broadly going to be the same thing.
I agree with you.
The difference here is that you will have communicated that the brand has changed, so therefore the application is going to be different but serving the same purpose. If you only have the egoless desktop approach, then they won't know the changes occurred, and they could completely confuse them.
And also,
just think of the support issues. They're going to say, hang on a second, my media player is not working, assuming they're talking about Rhythmbox, when they might be filing a bug against or complaining about Banshee towards Rhythmbox people. You know, it kind of...
What?
Imagine somebody goes from one version of, let's say, Ubuntu to another version of Ubuntu, right? And we've changed the media player from Rhythmbox to Banshee, right? Yep. Then they try to do something. They don't realise that the interface has changed a little bit, but they don't realise. They're going to try and click on something and it's not there anymore, right? Yep. So what they do is they go and complain... Right, about their media player. They don't know which version of Ubuntu they're running.
My Outlook Express doesn't
work. You have to say which version of Ubuntu you're running when you file a bug.
Right.
For precisely this reason.
My point is that I don't see anything wrong in communicating that the change has occurred between the two different applications. I don't see anything wrong with saying... What is wrong with having a brand? What do we take away from the user?
I think
because they then have to learn some meaningless word and then think, that's my media player.
But that's the way the world works.
But it's not the way the world has to work. It's just the way proprietary software works, and they got in before us.
No, it's not the world. Everything works. It's the way, if you go into any supermarket, people don't go up and buy a can that says beans on it. They go and buy Heinz baked beans.
That's precisely because those people are selling a product. The Heinz people think it's important that you buy Heinz next time rather than HP.
We're making a product. We're not selling it, but we're making a product.
Yeah, but there's no reason why distributors have to necessarily want to push one open source project over another. The whole point of it is that we have the option of offering this desktop and saying to people, you don't have to care about the particular names of what makes up your distro. You're running Ubuntu, you trust Ubuntu. You're running Fedora, you trust Fedora. Trust us to make the decisions for you. You don't have to. You don't have to think about the names. That's just the same thing as saying, well, people should care about lib whatever that does the work. You're quite prepared to accept that no one should have to know about libmagic, for example, which does
think you're comparing apples and oranges between libraries and user-visible applications.
Why? What? Why should they not have to
care
about library
names? There's no reason
why
a user should have to care about a library, whereas a user will care about different choices between different options.
Why? Why should they have to? Some users will, and those users can then go and care if they want to.
I mean,
no, the world doesn't work. You've got to say, well, the world works like that. People care about brand.
No, but fundamentally, people like to have choice, and you need a means of labeling different choices.
No, you don't. You need a way of installing different choices, but you don't have to force the name down everybody's throat, so everyone has to care about it.
So how do you install different media players without using a brand?
Exactly the same way you do it at the moment. If you want to go in and choose a media player by name now, fine, go ahead.
Oh, so brand's all right if you install a new media player?
Yes.
You just said that it's not all right.
No, I said that ordinary users don't have to care. And ordinary users who you said don't install extra software never have to care. People who actually give a shit which text editor they're using, people who care about more than I want to type some words into a window and then press the print button, people who think it's important to me how the indentation works and whether it highlights the braces, they're intelligent enough to go and understand.
I haven't seen him breathe in about 15 minutes. He has actually turned purple.
He has,
you know,
hasn't
it's
he?
Like, no, it's really important that everyone knows the difference between G-Edit and Kate. Fuck off.
No, but that's like saying, oh, no, it's really important that we, you know, subscribe to some usability bullshit that's pushed down our fucking throats. No, fuck off.
To me, right.
What usability bullshit?
The Eagleless desktop. Usability bullshit.
There are two things for me, right? And this is purely selfish. First of all, I think we should be celebrating our products.
Yeah, absolutely.
The second thing is, I want to click a button and get what I'm expecting. I don't want to get something different.
Yeah.
I want to know what, when I click a button, I know what I'm going to get. I want to get G-Edit. I don't want to get Kate or K-Write or X-Vim.
There's definitely a difference here between the kind of, as I say, people who use multiple text editors, for example, or multiple of a single type of application, and the people who just want a default. So I just want a default media player, because I really don't give a damn. As long as it will play, I really don't care.
People like
whereas
to play
text editors I do care about, so I would have multiple. So I might have a default text editor,
but,
which will...
Hold on.
Where it says text editor, and it'll start G,
on your
and
menu,
I'll have Vim and whatever.
On your menu.
But on the other one, I'll just have a media player.
Stop now.
Let me finish my point before you interrupt me a fucking again.
All right, man, don't get upset.
Jesus.
Your shipment of Chris has arrived.
Clearly he's not getting what he's expecting.
No, let's not go there. Right.
Walk away from that comment.
Don't, right? All right, let's not all get bent out of shape here, right?
Shut up.
So if when you...
Oh, man, you never dare me for getting upset.
Do you want to fight? Do you want to fight?
If I could drag you gentlemen back to...
Right, so when you install your second text editor, right? How are you going to differentiate between
because
them on
the
your
first,
menu?
The default one will say text editor. The next one will say Vim.
That breaks the rule.
Because you know,
the defaults don't have a name. Have a brand.
Think
right?
of it like...
Anything
that
extra.
Just makes no sense to my brain at all.
Think of it like a car. When you buy a car, you care about the model of the car, yeah? Jono, you got a Toyota RAV4. And you care that it is a Toyota RAV4. But you don't care about the brand of tyres or the brand of stereo or the brand of seat leather. You just get... The default. If you then decide to care about the tyres, you then go into QuickFit and go, I'd like some Bridgestones, I'd like some Michelin, I'd like some Pirelli P0s, right? So at that point, if you're the sort of person who gives a toss about this,
and
then you go and care. But when you buy it, you get a set of tyres, and you don't have. They don't make you say, which tyres do you want when you buy it? You just buy it and get a set.
No, they might say, hang on a second, well, what are you running? Like, so if I went to, you know, similar analogy, if I went to a guitar shop and they said, you know, or if, you know, using the car analogy, if they say, okay, well, what tyres have you got now? I'll say, well, I'm running rubber tyres.
Flat ones.
And they say, are they good tyres? Well, yeah, they're
this
I like them.
Actually very much, I've had a conversation like this. What have you got now? And I went, tyres.
I don't know, I've got rubber tyres.
Yeah, because you don't
have
don't have to care. I mean, last time I had the tyres changed on my car, I just went, just replace them with whatever tyres you like. On the previous car, I said, I want Pirelli P0 Rossos. It was a sports car.
I think.
Yeah, but now I don't care. And I think the desktop ought to be the same. It should just say tyres. It shouldn't say Pirelli P0 Rosso tyres.
Right, we're heading towards the wrap-up here now. I just wondered, out of interest, right, you said this has come up on the GNOME mailing list recently. How is where's their argument heading? Has it gone anything like ours?
Sort of. The person who brought it up was Daniel Siegel is his name, I think, the guy who does cheese.
Siegel, Rice and Pete.
Siegel, Rice and Pete. And he was saying when I put when I create a desktop file for cheese, the desktop file defines what something looks like in the menu. Should it say cheese? Should it say cheese webcam photo editor thing? Should it say webcam photo editor thing? What should it say? Yeah, and there's been discussion about. They brought up the point about translating the name and whether you do that or not. Point about things appearing in the same place in the menu. The fact that if something's just called text editor, if it's called something generic, then you can assume that it's the GNOME blessed one. You know, so something just called text editor, you, it must be the GNOME default one. Something called Vim text editor or Emacs text editor or whatever, you know it is something different, and therefore it must be you must have installed it for a reason. Which I thought was
imagine someone looking at a menu item and seeing the word cheese in there and wondering what the fuck is that?
Yeah,
but also I can see
cool though,
some value in people being recognised for their work and as developing, as having products and as having applications that people know about.
I'd like to see our products being thought of as being cool.
I'd hate to see Firefox only known as web browser. I like the fact that it's known as Firefox. It's got a very strong brand. It's got a very strong presence, right? But also, we need to make sure that people know what they're running, and I don't see what's wrong with saying Firefox web browser. Cheese, photo.
To my mind, it depends on what brand you want people to concentrate on. If you want people to concentrate on the level of individual applications, they'll forget they're running GNOME, and they'll forget they're running Ubuntu, because they see it as a collection of named applications. If you want people to concentrate on the brand GNOME,
then
they care about is this is the GNOME text editor, the GNOME web browser.
I don't think, first of all,
if you want people to concentrate on the brand Ubuntu, then again...
No one's going to forget they're running Ubuntu, because that's the thing that they install on their computer. They may well not realize that, or forget they're running GNOME, because GNOME's infrastructure. And you don't really see the word GNOME splashed all over the place.
It's fucking wallpaper and curtains, isn't it?
But applications, in my mind, are of the same level in many ways as Ubuntu. They're very forward-focusing in terms of the brand. GNOME isn't particularly. X isn't particularly. GTK isn't particularly.
You see,
GTK are slightly different things.
I would like to see people thinking. I think it's good for consistency. If people are saying, I'm running Fedora, so I said it in the Fedora text editor. They don't have to care whether it's Gedit or Vim or whatever. Well, they have to care if it's Vim because it genuinely works differently.
Yeah.
It doesn't work how people would expect initially. But if people are doing that, you then get more people saying, I'm running Fedora. And saying, what are you running? Oh, yeah, I'm running Firefox and whatever. And they forget about the underlying thing. So there's not much pulling people together. You have to go all the way down to the word Linux before they get anything
but
in
invariably
common.
People will say, I'm running the text editor that comes with Fedora. And then people will know that refers to something else. The thing is that clearly there is no single pro on either of these counts.
Which to me is
why it makes absolute sense to basically strike the middle ground and have the brand and the description.
Yes,
and then you have the best of both worlds.
So. Interestingly, right, I don't think we've had a good amount of flames in the Lug Radio studio for a little while now.
It was nice,
right?
Wasn't it?
And in fact, it got so heated there, Axe hairs actually turned ginger.
while I think about it, fuck off.
Right. I think this...
Don't shoot the messenger.
I think this... I think this will probably generate a lot of discussion off air as well. Yeah. So, you lot, if you're listening, I hope you are.
Some of you.
It's probably the
not just Chris.
Yeah. let us know what you think. There can't possibly be anybody else left in the world, let alone the California area.
We say this at the start of every time we talk about
do
this.
Do I?
Yeah, no, we do.
Oh.
Specifically you and Mr. Langley.
It's true, though. There can't be anyone left who doesn't know.
No.
Well, I'd like to think so.
So, just in case you didn't...
People are going, what the fuck are you talking about?
By the time you hear this, this Saturday is Lug Radio Live in the USA.
Yes,
yes, it is.
12th and 13th of April.
Oh, we're actually quite excited about it now. We've come through the horrific stage of organising it all.
Yeah.
And it's now really exciting. It's on Saturday.
Very, very exciting.
On Saturday in the Metreon in San Francisco. Go to lugradio.org/live to find out all about it.
Yes, we have one piece of particularly new information.
And before we go on, I would like to applaud Mr. Bacon for having the stones to actually ask about this. Well, well done, John. A home round of applause
for
you.
Thank you. Well, basically, listeners of the show will probably be familiar with something called the Gongathon.
Oh, my God.
The
The Gongathon. Yes, it's the
full title last year was Adam Sweet's Gongathon Lightbulb Talk Extravaganza.
And the basic idea is a very small, white, pasty male in a...
Preferably lubed up.
Preferably lubed up in baby oil, in a thong with a very large gong behind him and a series of five-minute talks. And we were...
Hang on. Technically, the point is the series of five-minute talks. The point is not the dude with the gong.
Yeah, just switch that the other way around. So anyway, we were trying to think of a suitable person to be in the thong this year, and we had a short list, or maybe a shit list is the other way of describing it.
I point blank refused to do it a second year on the trot, by the way.
I was a bit worried because I was thinking if we didn't get someone, I was going to have to be in the thong. So anyway, we're pleased to announce that the person in the thong is going to be Mr. Aaron Bockover, the guy who founded the Banshee Media Player.
I happen to feel very fucking sorry for him, you know, because I've done it and it's not nice. It's very much mind over matter. And you appreciate the humour to everybody else, but all you feel is shame. And I've been drunk enough not to have to worry about my fucking self-worth anymore. My pride shot to pieces. I got nothing to hide about.
It's going to be excellent. I should also note that I did actually originally ask Miguel de Casa if he wanted to do it as well.
Borrowed his skin.
Right, no reply from him. Jeremy Allison said maybe, you know, 5 or 10 years ago and £50 ago, I'd have done it.
Oh, I shouldn't have meant to say that.
That's what he told me.
I know, but I don't think you were supposed to read it on air. And you have known form of reading stuff on air.
And someone who was very excited when I originally spoke to him about it was Ted Ager.
Oh,
but then I took it back from him.
Teeth, Ted.
And went with the desire of tiny 12-and-a-half-year-old Aaron Bockover.
Bloke's doing us a favour.
Yeah,
he's gonna... not actually 12 and a half, we should point out, for legal reasons.
Yeah, well, listen, yeah, that's a good point.
I was just thinking that's fine. I mean, we're in San Francisco and everything, but probably child sex on stage is not really the way forward, is it?
you're saying,
I don't know what you're intending to do with my stage.
You're saying, you know, let's not be harsh on him. Well, when he bans your fucking media collection from the show, let's see how you feel.
We ought to explain that because some people might not have been listening to the show that long. A while back, we were at Guardic. And Aaron Bockover put some code into Banshee Media Player to specifically ban the sharing of a music library called Jono's World of Metal.
Disgusting. That's discrimination.
It is. But positive discrimination. Yeah.
Otherwise known as relief.
Thank you. Anyway, so Aaron Bockover, big man. He's going to, short man.
Small, scrawny man.
We're about to find out anyway.
If you want to come and get an eye full of Aaron Bockover, come to Lug Radio Live. We've got over 36 speakers, over 40 exhibitors.
We have.
We've got a bag full of shit that you're going to get when you come into the venue. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's also going to be parties on the Friday night and the Saturday night, which we are on the cusp of confirming. The Saturday night one is pretty likely to be at Jillian's in the Metreon. It's pretty much confirmed that that's going to be where it is.
So keep your eye on lugradio.org/live for details of the party.
The Friday night is going to be announced fairly soon. So
if you fancy doing a lightning talk, a light bulb talk, whatever.
Yeah, if you want to stand next to
have a think about it, work out what you're going to say.
Looking for a 3-4 minute talk, and then you get gonged off. The other thing we ought to say very briefly is I would like to say thank you very much to the people who are paying for it all to happen. Really,
yes.
Which is first of all the people who pre-registered. Thank you, all the people who pre-registered, and lots more of you are going to turn up on the door. We know, but
how much is it on the door?
$10.
$10.
From what I can tell, there is no other event in the US at all of this size, of this standing, that you can get in for $10.
You're joking. There's no burger in the US you can buy for $10, let alone a 2 day.
All the others let everybody in for free.
The reason why this is $10, we've discovered that organising an event in the US is considerably harder than organising an event in the UK. One particular group that has been incredibly helpful has been Google, and they have invested a huge amount of money in
the Google open source team.
And specifically, big thanks to Leslie Hawthorne, Cat Allman and Kynan Dent.
That's Cat Allman, not Allman.
Allman. As in Allman. Mark Allman.
Now you be quiet. And
Other people who've put in DICE, the recruitment company, have put in a big wedge to help us get there.
Big thanks to Sandy Bland, really cool. Sandy Bland and Egon Macaroni
and Wendy over there at DICE. They've been really helpful.
Sorry, I mean Theron and Connery.
Thank you. It's not bloody Egon Rone. Right. And also thank you to Linux Questions. Jeremy Linux Questions has been a star.
He has.
And finally, dealt with my rather panicky emails about paying for stuff.
And finally, a big thanks to Brian Osborne and Ricky Kite from Linux Pro Magazine.
Linux Pro Magazine, absolutely.
One more bit, another big thank you. We ought to say somebody who is not in this room has been working very, very, very hard to fulfil all of our demands, and that's Mike.
Yes, who
has a surname.
Michael Evans, yeah.
Michael Evans, our designer, and Tony Whitmore, our crew head.
They've just done Tony's work is yet to begin in many ways, but Mike has helped
Tony,
us.
Your fail has arrived.
Mike has acted above and beyond the call of duty because Tony gets to go to America and Mike doesn't. He just gets to sit in his room and listen to Lug Radio Live from the USA.
Yeah, Mike has done all the website, the lugradio.org website. He's done all of the live stuff that we've ever done. Because the first year, we didn't really have any design, but from 2006 onwards, we had a design, didn't we? No, 2006 we didn't.
No, 2006 I did it.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But Mike's basically done... Well, since we had a design,
yeah,
Mike's done everything.
Since we had a good design, Mike did all the work.
And he continues to help us, and it's all done for free, which is rare with designers, to be honest.
So yes, this Saturday, Lug Radio Live, The Metreon, California. See you on Saturday morning. Go to lugradio.org/live to find out all the details.
We will see you there, and you can see Aaron Bockover's tiny, tiny penis. Sorry.
So, it's time for the emails.
Yes,
I suppose it's the end of the show, I suppose.
It is.
It is the end of the show.
And it's time for the emails.
It's still time for the emails.
And it's time for the emails, and it's the end of the show. How convenient.
Should I maybe kick it off?
Go ahead.
You have the laptop.
I've got
sensible.
The laptop. We've had an email from Florian Arndt.
That's his or her real name, is
that's
it?
That's Florian Arndt. And Florian says... Hello, folks. I've just written a small extension to an open source Flash player so that it plays back the last five shows of Lug Radio. You can check it out at www.florianarndt.com/jukebox.
That doesn't help.
It's Florian, FLORIANARNDT.com/jukebox. I'll happily share full sources. See you in San Francisco at Lug Radio Live. And we've looked at this.
I had a look at this.
It's pretty freaking cool, isn't it?
It's really cool.
It's very, very good. Did you try it in Gnash, Ash?
I did try in Gnash and it didn't work.
So, Florian, if you can make it work in Gnash, because we'd like to try and love freedom, then we'd love to put it on our website, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'd be quite happy to do that, have people listen. I mean, the issue I've always had with streaming in the past is that it eats our bandwidth, but, I'm sure it'll be fine.
But very, very good. Yes, so thank you for letting us know.
Thank you very much. We have an email from a chap called Graham Binns.
Ah.
Saying,
hello, Kookbook.
Saying...
It's from Lancashire.
Bowls in their lips is the title of the email. So I expect this is a shoeing from Mr. Sweet. He says, just listening to the latest show, and Sweet has just used the phrase bowls through their lips to much hilarity and assorted what the fuckish reactions. Have any of
Don't read this out, because this is rank.
Yeah, no. You're correct.
Read the airline. You got it.
Don't do this, people.
No, it's too long anyway.
Yeah, it's
but, not safe for work.
Lingpot.org/ring.
No. He suggests looking at modblog.bmezine.com. And the particular thing he pointed us at, which is hugely, hugely, hugely not safe for work, was basically the Goatsy guy, but with all the skin tattooed. And it's just rough.
It is actually quite possibly one of the worst things I've ever, ever seen. It is horrible.
You haven't seen Two Girls, One Cup yet, have you?
So the next time someone says to you, what we really need is 3D rather than 2D screens, tell them, no, we don't need that. That's disgusting.
On the scale of how fucked up something is going from 0 to Dave 2, it's at Dave 2 kind of level.
Oh, I cracked up on IRC. Was it yesterday? I was on IRC and Dave 2 had cloaked his name to fail. It was brilliant. Okay, I've got an email here from Christian Holm, entitled Hello Lug Radio People.
Hello.
I don't know how I'm going to get through the beginning of this email. Do you know, like on icanhasacheeseburger.com, they always go, They would go, hey, H-A-I.
Yeah. He's like, oh, hi.
Oh, hi. I'm guessing this is perhaps... Oh, this explains it. He goes, hi, Lug Radio Idiota. And he goes, that's Norwegian for hi, good and fine Lug Radio presenters.
Now, I don't think I believe you. Not a Christian home.
Right.
Now, any other Norwegians want to write in and correct, they're all going to band together as a bunch of Norwegians saying, no, that's absolutely what it means. And if it fucking doesn't, I don't believe it for a moment.
Don't slag off the nation of black metal.
Why?
Actually, I hate black metal.
When did the last black metal song come out anyway? I thought it was like mid-90s thing.
Weren't they all murdering each other anyway?
For a while.
There's none left.
Burning down churches
and
stuff.
Fucking nutters.
Speaking as a person who listens to hip-hop, can't really complain about that kind of behaviour.
Yeah, live in colour.
Anyway, he says, after listening to the entire collection of fine quality Lug Radio OG files, Loving the Freedom, starting in January and finishing as I speak, I write this actually, I have been wondering... What does Jonathan Edward James Bacon...
Thank you, once again, thank you very much.
...and Stuart Langridge hate the most? The EFF, RMS, or Emacs?
Ooh.
That's
quite tough, actually,
that's a tough
that.
One, isn't it?
Although, to be honest with you, the clear and absolute answer...
It's pretty obvious, isn't it?
It's Emacs.
It's got to be Emacs.
It's Emacs. I fucking loathe Emacs. I hate it.
It's beyond fail.
It is. It's just... It's like if you took, you put together a huge list of what would be good about an editor and then reversed all of them. and then said, all these things that we've done wrong, we've written them all in Lisp, too.
Basically, you just don't do it.
It's like that episode of Red Dwarf where everything's in reverse.
Yeah.
In the Emacs world.
Conveniently that you should say that then, Emacs, because Christian continues. If the answer's Emacs, then lame joke, then fuck you, Notepad boys. And he says, this, of course, is a reference to Axe statement, I use gedit for everything.
I do. Fuck off. Why would I want to use fucking Emacs?
Listen,
rubbish.
It doesn't matter what you say, Emacs boy. You're never, ever going to win.
I was going to say, essentially, you have now automatically lost by saying you like Emacs, yeah. Like Chris does.
There's nothing wrong with Emacs. It's fantastic.
Why do you like it? What's good about it? Come on, you've got... You know, you've got 10 seconds in which to describe why Emacs...
Tell us why your pointless editor is really good.
It's the psychoanalyst, isn't it?
Psychoanalyst is trifling.
Yeah, exactly. You go, brilliant. What I need to do is meta-X doctor.
Yeah, it's really good.
Fuck off.
If I want to replace every fourth S in a word, then all I need to do is press Alt-Meta-10-Meta-Z...
Yeah, do that with GED.
Stand on one. Why? Who cares?
Sometimes, if you really need to be able to do that sort of thing.
No, you don't. That's the point.
Incidentally,
yes, you do.
You never need to do it. Also, you get halfway through doing that, and then you can replace the first three S's and then read some news and then do the fourth.
Yeah, because, you know, you can spend your entire day in Emacs because that's one of the major benefits of it.
I'd like to point out the laptop's getting quite heavy now, so I'd like to carry on.
Spending your entire day in Emacs and being proud of it is like spending your entire day in Oblivion Prison and being proud of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Shut up.
It's a new form of technique used by the Americans is spending all day in Emacs.
Okay, extraordinary rendition. They ship you over to Somalia and make you use Emacs and don't tell you it's Control C, Control X to quit or whatever the hell it is.
That's the thing, they make it so difficult to get out of fucking Emacs.
You have to kill it from another ship.
All you need
basically, your problem is you understand the T binding.
The way you get out of Emacs is you just need to go right through Falcon's
base.
the big problem here is that, you know, when you say you don't understand the key bindings, that's like saying, yeah, the big problem with Sumerian is no one understands the language, which it is, but since no one understands the language, it's fucking useless to everybody. So shut up.
But it's all right.
Go and
check out the new release.
Not much.
First release in 8 years, but it's, you know, it's really good.
Okay, it's fantastic. So sorry to move on. I'd like to see your keyboard, by the way, John O'Bacon, because I've never heard of the 10 key.
I bet the Mac's got one.
I think nobody's going to understand what I'm on about unless they listen to the show twice and hear it coming the second time. Anyway, so I'll continue. Of all the shows you guys have given the world, my favourites are season four episodes 17 and 18. Some highlights from these are Jono's reply, a tiny bit of me just died, as Matt Lee mentions Emacs.
There it is.
And Proctor and Bacon's great Emacs with two terminals discussion.
Hey. Sing it, brother.
So, Aaron, does a bit of you die every time somebody mentions Emacs?
A very tiny bit of my soul.
So if I keep mentioning
fails.
Emacs, 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 Emacs.
A little bit of me doesn't want to continue.
Emacs, Emacs.
So my, he says, my kind of odd selection of faded Lug Radio moments is because I absolutely love Emacs and use it for everything.
Oh.
If this if this email successfully passes the probably strict Emacs filter at Lug Radio Towers, one of you have said Emacs 7 times, including this last statement. That'll be me then. But probably this will not have passed the Emacs or Winky Smile filters. And now for something completely different.
Well, now, before he goes on, I mean, he's keen on us saying Emacs, so I'd just like to say Emacs is shit.
Yeah, I'd also like to follow that with fuck off, Emacs. Adam, hey, do you have anything to say?
You know what? Cool. The thing is, Emacs to me is like fucking Microsoft Word. I just don't fucking care. I just don't care.
And Chris, would you like to give your opinion on Emacs?
Emacs rocks.
Why don't you use it then?
You did. At one point, Chris proudly came on the Wolves Lug mailing list and described it as Emacs as being his operating system.
Yeah. And now he doesn't use
Emacs
it anymore.
Emacs is my operating system. Linux is my device.
Is that because GNOME was faster?
I'd like to shoot you.
Why don't you use Emacs?
I don't use a text editor because a desktop environment is faster than it.
Yeah,
that makes no sense whatsoever.
Why don't you use Emacs?
VI is faster over an SSH term.
Oh, I'd like to reiterate awful. Adam's statement just now, which I don't know if you guys heard. Adam just looked at Chris and said, I'd like to shoot you in the face.
So I think we better carry on quite quickly because we're going on for hours here. And now for something completely different. After the last show, I wanted to share my How I Came to Love Freedom story with you guys.
Oh, cool. We asked people to send in these. And they're really
involving Max.
I think loads of people have spotted that the people that send in the Freedom Loving story wins a t-shirt. So we've had quite a few of these, I
Why?
Think. I've been using Windows and Ubuntu side by side for some time and realised that this was wrong after I started my Lug Radio loving. When I discovered that my MP3 player, LG FM33, if you care, supports Ogvorbis, the road to format the hard disk and hard drive and put Gobuntu on it was very short indeed.
Cool.
I now understand that Windows, Flash and all things proprietary must be avoided at all costs.
Well said, man.
Hadn't spotted the fucking Emacs problem, though.
Well, you know.
Emacs is free software.
That's not the problem I'm talking about.
You can download all your songs from Emacs tunes. Because you can spend all day in Emacs because it's that good.
Yeah, he's got an E-pod.
I'm sure someone has written a media player in Emacs.
The E-pod is just like an iPod, except it takes 25 minutes to start, but it weighs 4,000 tons.
And it's just got a meta key and an X key on it. Instead of a scroll.
It's got like a million keys. It looks like a blender in it.
And you have to press them all in the right sequence to shut it down. I'm just finding my place again. I'm now very happy with running Emacs, reading man pages, and listening to your podcast in the Freedom format. This is actually not a joke. Since I removed Windows and the possibility to watch funny cats on YouTube, I have seen an increase in my overall productivity and started learning stuff about Linux, other than how to install Flash and other proprietary shit to watch cats on YouTube.
Surely the productivity has been offset by the amount of time having to learn Emacs key bindings.
You would think. But
the point here is that, you know, you could use a sensible editor which is free and get all that time back and still not be using proprietary stuff.
Yeah,
like Gedit, for example. I don't know why I've become like the Gedit pimp.
I like the fact
because you're not smart enough to learn Emacs. That's all it is.
It's ever since you wrote that into your own Wikipedia page, isn't it?
I bloody didn't.
You admitted that you edited your own Wikipedia page.
I didn't write the Gedit bit.
Oh, but you wrote the rest of it.
No, I wrote some of it and then was bollocked and then stopped doing it.
Okay. Incidentally, that picture of you actually is quite cool on that page.
Which picture is it of me?
It's you kind of looking into the distance like a catalogue model. Okay. Like a Grattan catalogue kind of.
Oh, well, I'm not.
So Chono stares lovingly at Axe's picture on Wikipedia.
Oh, well, I'm touched, thank you. And Adam was nice about my hair in a picture today.
Your hair looked wicked, actually.
Thank you. That's very kind of all of you.
Are you sure it was him?
And I would like to say thank you to all the people who did me Hakagotchis as well. Thanks for that, that was really
kind. That one with the red glow was quite cool, I thought.
They were cool stuff.
I wish someone had made me a Hakagotchi, because Jono's got a wicked Hakagotchi that some dude made him. Mm. You've got a wicked Hakagotchi now, and I've got the perfect photo for a Hakagotchi and just my shit effort that came out of it.
You seem to have the same version of the GIMP that Axe got, in the fact that it's kind of just anti-aliasing just isn't switched on.
Yeah. It's because I rotated the image so my head was the right way up or something. Anyway, I ought to point out we've been waffling so long that the screen's gone black in power saving mode. So I'll just finish this guy's email anyway. I like the fact that he keeps reiterating that it's all about watching funny cats on YouTube. A big thanks to the entire Lug Radio crew, all from season 1 to the current, and especially to Ak, who showed me the one true way to freedom. Piss.
Thank you, mate. I appreciate that, Christian Holm. And I'm glad I could help.
Incidentally, I'd like you to point out, this is the guy who's been talking about Emacs for an entire email.
He's loving the freedom. He moved from Windows. The fact that he's using the editor I use is a different thing. He's in the free world.
So it's good to know that, you know, G-Edit advocates and Emacs advocates can live in the same world.
Absolutely.
I feel really happy. All the soul that died 5 minutes ago has now been
reborn.
We're
all friends together.
We're all friends together. Chris, do you fancy a hug?
Not from you.
Oh, don't, please. It'll be like a fucking helicopter accident. Anyway, I'll finish this guy's email. P.S. Since I'm neither a great writer or especially good in English, please feel free to make fun of my attempt to be funny, my grammar, or the fact that I use Gmail after raving about all about the freedom.
P.S.
Thanks for a fucking good podcast.
Good email.
Cool. No, good
fucking
email.
Brilliant email.
Thank you, Christian Holm. No, quite pleased about that. So, yes, absolutely. And well done for embracing freedom. Good move.
Embrace, embrace, embrace.
And extend.
And possibly destroy.
Christoph.
How long is this email? With no paragraphs in it at all. Please, if you didn't write in emails, please put paragraph breaks.
No, I did this last time as well.
Oh, is this
it's his act.
Please put paragraph breaks.
Once again.
As he pointed out, if anyone's going to pay him to write something that actually takes more than half an hour to write, then feel free.
Quite right. I can supply you with my contract rate for the day if you like. Otherwise, live with the script you've got.
He's paid in DVDs.
Well, that's been told.
Top Gear DVDs.
That would be fine, actually. I'm quite happy to accept those in lieu of money. Apart from that, I've got them all.
Anyway,
legally purchased
from Martin Welsh.
Is this Martin Squelch?
Mr. Squelch.
Yeah. Martin Squelch, yeah, yes. That's the one. Concern over the state of Linux in the UK. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello. Speaking to your microphone, Christoph.
I'm trying to read the street and, yeah.
You can lift the laptop.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have arms.
Oh, no.
Perform a forklift operation. Rise. Use your arms.
So we should all be quiet.
Chris looks as annoyed for patronising him on air about how to hold a laptop and speak into a microphone.
He's doing his schoolmistress look
again. Sadly, I failed to notice this and just carried on telling him what to do.
There are a few UK Linux events that I look forward to each year, namely Lug Radio Live.
Woo! Yay!
And the Linux World Expo. I attend both of these events for different reasons. Lug Radio Live, because it's easily the best and most fun Linux event of the year.
Whee!
No TV's sending this into, doesn't he?
Kick ass.
And it fits really well with my personal fondness, strictly platonic, of Linux and FOSS.
Excellent.
Cool. Linux World Expo, because it fits a little better with my work-related involvement with Linux. Last year, I really enjoyed LOL. I was mildly disappointed when Linux World Expo was postponed until spring. But was prepared to wait a little longer. So now it's spring 2008. Not a sausage. Not even a chipolata.
Pushing the sausage analogy a bit far.
Yeah, just a little bit. I found a very small morsel in the form of...
Stop it.
Is that one of them little cocktail sausages?
This dude's really fucking hungry, isn't he?
I found a small morsel in the form of a date for Linux Conference and Expo as 1st of October 2008. So not the spring 2008, autumn. A year from when it was meant to be run. I understand that the kernel summit was quite close to the planned date for the Expo.
Yeah, the reason it was... Go on. I think we're going to say the same thing.
As I say, the reason Linux Expo was officially cancelled was because it was too close to the kernel summit, which is also in
the invitation only kernel summit.
The invitation only kernel summit.
As opposed to the general purpose Linux Expo. Not wanting to, you know.
Well, we oughtn't to shoot people too much for that kind of thing.
No, we shouldn't.
But
language.
Anyway.
Hypocrite that you are.
Raging hypocrisy from my point of view.
So I understand that the kernel summit and the Expo were both in the UK. But I don't buy that their audiences are that similar, not to bother holding both events. It's even worse that the postponed 2007 Expo seems to have been quietly forgotten about. Given that global acceptance and commercial adoption of Linux seems to be growing, it seems a little worrying that the UK-based events seem to be diminishing, or at least struggling. I noted that Red Hat didn't bother to display at the Linux World UK Expo. Oh, sorry. Red Hat didn't display there either, basically. Is this just a twilight spell or a worrying trend for Linux in the UK?
Well, I mean, my thought on this is that we're currently in kind of transition period. It's not, there's not quite enough acceptance in business that you can run lots of business-focused conferences. But equally, there's enough focus in business that people want business-focused conferences, if you see what I mean. I mean, the reason we set up Lug Radio Live was because the only Linux event in the UK was really the Linux Expo in Olympia. Yeah. And we went down there, and the time when we really enjoyed it was in the evenings, the social bits. And we thought, why don't we take the social bit and make a whole conference out of it? And that was the first Lug Radio Live in 2005. That was the plan.
Yeah, the Linux Expo always seemed to divide into two parts. There was kind of the business bit full of people in suits selling stuff.
And then there was the dot org village,
which was just
50 smelly geeks.
50 smelly geeks drinking beer and having fun.
I think demonstrating KDE in Welsh and cool stuff like that. Yeah. Wicked.
I think part of the problem is that conferences are really expensive for businesses to exhibit at. I mean, to exhibit at something like Linux World, I don't know how much the prices are. It's very expensive.
That's because they do them in places like Olympia, which cost a fortune.
And I think part of the problem is that I don't think in the UK businesses can justify it as much as they can in the US. So Linux World in San Francisco is massive.
It is massive. I was there this year. It's huge.
You know, and whereas in the UK, I think it's a bit more of a struggle. And you basically need... I mean, I don't know why they cancelled it, but you need...
Wasn't it because they wanted all the kernel developers wouldn't go?
They said it was to do with the kernel thing.
I have my doubts about that, because I can't imagine...
That's the story, of course.
But I can't imagine that many kernel developers showing up.
Would you really cancel
World
the
anyway?
Because of that. I mean,
really,
I suspect it was more to do with the sponsorship.
I'm guessing nobody really wanted to. There wasn't enough
interest.
It's
a bit of a lame excuse.
But let's not forget, this isn't the first time it's been cancelled either. I'm sure it got cancelled a couple of years ago. And then there hasn't been one for ages. And am I right in thinking this was like the first one for a couple of years?
It was there in 2006. It was cancelled in 2007. It was there in 2000.
I'm sure 2005.
It's fluctuated between the Linux World and the Linux User and Developer Conference, is what it used to be, and it was the Linux Expo for that.
I think really the thing is the fact it's quite a large event and an expensive for exhibitors, as you say, and compared to America, the Linux market in the UK is probably like a little bit of a pond compared to. The market anywhere
and
else,
also,
and perhaps it's quite difficult to drum up that level of interest.
Without wanting to, entirely wanting to pimp Lug Radio Live. Lug Radio Live, like Axe says, is its primary aim is to make a conference event that's fun and interesting and affordable is the other thing. Not only for people who come along, because it's like a fiver to get in, but also for exhibitors.
Yes.
It doesn't cost you anything to exhibit Lug Radio Live. You don't have to spend £1,500 on a booth. You know, for one day.
A lot more than that, I'd have thought.
So if you do want to come and exhibit Lug Radio Live, and it's growing every year, just get in touch with us.
Do you think this means there's a gap in the market for another Lug Radio Live-style event?
I'd like to see Lug Radio Live become the Linux World Expo.
People wouldn't be surprised by that.
I'd like to see that happen.
I see your point.
And it to become the place where businesses go, but it's just, you know, but it's more of an interesting atmosphere as opposed to more of a formal
enterprise. The thing
atmosphere.
I like about Lug Radio Live, and this is not just because I'm a presenter, because I wasn't always a presenter. The best thing about Lug Radio Live for me is it's normal people's chances to go and pimp their project.
Yeah.
It's your chance to get on the stage. It's your chance to exhibit. You don't have to be a big name or a cool a web company or anything like that.
I have to say, some of the best talks I've ever seen at Lug Radio Live were kind of just no-name people who just happened to wander into their talk and I had no idea what it was about or anything, and they were just fantastic talks.
So. No, it's all good. We've had an email from Peter, no surname. Greetings from the Lana Kingdom. Gentlemen, I just finished listening to your latest pod thing. Yes, thing is a word arrived after much thinking. And I thought I better send you an email. You asked for messages from people in distant lands. We actually asked for messages from people who lived in weird countries.
but distant lands
that's a nice way of
putting
it. And so I thought I'd respond. Whilst I was born in the centre of the universe, Yorkshire, in case of any doubt.
No doubt.
I now live in the former capital of the Lana Kingdom, Chiang Mai. Not a lot happens here. There's a lot of rice grown. Fun to watch it grow. And tourists are harvested here and there. don't go there on holiday then. Bleeding edge technology for most of the population here is a calculator which does not use batteries. Of computer users, I'm the only Linux user I know of here, and so I have to fix all of my own problems. Everyone else uses pirated Windows, and since a CD of Windows is the same price as a beer or a DVD of Windows, and a range of applications cost two beers, I think you will understand why I prefer the beer. I once asked a computer shop if they supported Ubuntu, and they told me that they were not a restaurant, and if I wanted a Western sandwich, I should go elsewhere. The standard computer problem solving in the local shops costs about is about the cost of three beers, and it's quite simple. They format and reinstall Windows no matter what the problem. Never mind about the data. They will format that as well. Free spyware, but you may not notice. In the last show, you mentioned, in passing, the ladies with rings around their necks. Mr. Sweet, again.
Let's clarify what I meant by ring.
Adam Sweet, Lug Radio's cultural ambassador.
What I was referring to, there's people that put, like, it's like a coiled ring around their neck that makes extends the neck.
We didn't think people meant the stretchy rectum.
No. Well, I mean, after what Graham Binns email, let's face it, the chance, it's possible.
And incidentally, for those listeners, we should thank Axe mate Bill for sending an email in.
Oh, yeah.
Do a search on amazon.co.uk for the book Penetrating Wagner's Ring and go and look at the reviews. Quite amusing.
They are hilarious.
I think it's just on amazon.co.uk. It never stops being funny. Thanks, Bill, for that. Cultural ambassador Adam Sweet.
Thank you.
Thanks for that.
Also available.
In the People's Republic of Wolverhampton. It happens that this tribe of Karen Hill people and live up just the road from here. So he provides a link to some web address and karenlongneck.html. I know that you may be a little suspicious when I point out that these rings are a reflection of the indigenous adaptation of technology, but they're actually personal Wi-Fi range extenders. With the limited deployment of technology, you need to do everything you can to help yourself. So all you do is run a cable from the wireless NIC to the rings around your neck and watch the signal jump. Bit like a cantenna, really. Anyway.
Oh, I see. So these people have now got a neck which is 2 feet long because it's a waveguide. Right.
Anyway, now that you know, I'm here in the remote northwest of Thailand in close reach of the Burma and Laos borders, you are welcome to send me a T-shirt. Not that I would ever get it, though. The customs or postman would. Have a nice holiday in the States. Sorry I can't be there too far. Look at the cost of airfare. If you want to do a roadshow in Thailand, I will come. Thanks very much, Peter. That guy, incidentally, is a comedy legend.
He's good, isn't he?
Send us more email, Peter. You are very, very funny.
I did particularly like his crack about the calculator. So, yes. And last email of the show is from Roger Light, noted friend of the show.
Yes.
Who sent an email saying, acceptable proprietary software. And he says, hi, the canonical example of proprietary software that is acceptable to use is Launchpad. And he's got canonical with a capital C. That is all, Roger. And yes, Roger, I completely agree with
you. Comic genius.
Well said. So, now, it has occurred to us that we forgot to do a T-shirt for the best email
last week.
Before
we do that,
again,
I just want to say, we had a lot of email regarding our discussion in the last show about the kind of new economic of the music industry and Creative Commons, all that kind of stuff. 2 points here. Point number one is we got a lot of email about this, and we want to cover it in a future segment to cover it in more detail because there's a lot of really interesting discussion come through. And point number two is that there is a project underway which we think you might be quite interested in,
which will
be announced fairly soon. So keep your ears peeled
for that.
If that's what you do with it.
There's also been quite a lot of discussion about this on the Lug Radio forum. So if you wanted to talk about this with other people, forums.lugradio.org, and there's a pretty big discussion going on there about how the music industry might work, so on and so forth. We didn't do a T-shirt last week, so we're going to do two this week, I think.
If you insist.
Yep.
Sorry, news to me.
This was me whispering to Ark while we were reading out some of
the emails. I thought it was a good idea. So I would like to nominate...
I think I know which two they're going to be.
Peter and the other chap whose name
Christian
is going to be Christian Holm.
Yes.
Do we have any objections?
No objections.
Right, I'd also like to do, and I'm willing to pony up for this, not it's going to cost me much. I'm not sure whether... Peter says he's not sure whether his T-shirt is actually going to make it through customs and not get pocketed by somebody. But also, given that you live in the wilds of Thailand... if you tell us what your favourite beer is, I'll buy you a can of your favourite beer and post it to you.
That's a nice idea. It's
going to be Tetley's.
It won't explode in the plane, will it, by the way?
Well, he's from Yorkshire. He is, isn't he?
Yorkshire! Yeah.
I'm not at all convinced you're allowed to send beer into Thailand, but we'll give it a shot.
We'll try it.
Yeah. It's going to be posted from Chris's house anyway, so the feds will turn up at Chris's house.
I drop it in the mail at work.
I didn't really pick the guy because I thought his email was good. I just picked it because I want the entertainment of watching Chris try and send an email to send a letter to Thailand. Peter and Christian Holm, if you'd like to send us your addresses, we will wing an exclusive Lug Radio t-shirt off to you.
Why is Thailand so much harder to post things to than like Australia and France? Serbia and
it's because all the letters, it's all the letters that are next to each other in a Thai address. It's like someone headbutting a keyboard.
Yeah, and it's probably going to take fucking weeks to get there because he just doesn't like, it's not like he lives in Bangkok, is it? He's way out on the middle of nowhere.
Plains of Weirdo.
Peter from the Plains of Weirdo.
Send us your address and what size t-shirt you'd like.
Absolutely.
If I've got any spare ones left.
And we will dispatch an exclusive, exciting Lug Radio t-shirt to you.
I think that we're done.
We are done.
And,
done.
You know, we've said it before, we'll say it again. This Saturday, Lug Radio Live in the US. Woo! Get over to the Metreon in San Francisco.
We will see you there. Those of you who are not showing up, shame upon you, even if you do live in Thailand. We will see you on Saturday.
And the next show will be coming live. Well, it will be recorded live in San Francisco.
All shows are recorded live.
Kind of.
I'm trying to build it up, San Francisco.
Everyone be quiet. Let Jono have a go.
From San Francisco, it's Lug Radio!
Thank you very much.
He always is.
I'm going to get a bow tie that spins round. Did you see EastEnders last
night? Yes, Frank and his bow tie.
You know what?
I thought Frank was dead.
He is now.
He is now.
What?
Yeah.
Frank's dead, man. Frank's dead.
And but he died in last night's episode.
Yeah.
Did the bow tie chop his head off?
No. Can I just say, care?
The fact that the actor himself died 2 years ago is...
How was he in the bloody show last night then?
Retrospective.
It wasn't 2 years ago.
He's been dead a couple of years.
Should we finish the show?
The world fucking cares.
Really. Mike Reed's
dead, man.
I know he's dead, but he didn't die 2 years ago.
Well, it was two or three. When was he dead? Smart ass. Fucking Mike Reed. Wikipedia.com/en/ Mike Reed.
/ get involved.
Fucking what?
MikeReedPedia.com/en/ Mike Reed.
You know what I'm saying.
Also, saying Mike Reedpedia is probably slander. So, thank you very much. We shall see you on Saturday.
It's been emotional.
Yes. Bye. Bye.